Welcome to the Amber May Show. I'm Amber May. Oh, today is going to be an amazing day for you as my audience because we're going to interview Dr. Frank. Now, if you are not familiar with Dr. Frank, he was on the Mike Lindell documentaries that were discussing what happened in the 2020 election. But before we get started, I want to make sure that you click on the links below because YouTube is taking off a lot of conservative voices, but that's okay because we'll grow other platforms. So if YouTube wants to defund itself, that's fine. We will let that happened. Just so we can stay in touch, make sure you click the links below so you always know where I'm at. And before we get started, I wanted to let you know that there's a video in the link below that I want you to check out because I want to help you build legacy wealth for your family. I want to help you with tax-free retirement. I want to help you build income that way, like if there were like in my case, my air condition went out, I could pull money out of my account, pay for my air condition, and it's not a big deal. So I want to help you do that. And more information's in the link below. Dr. Frank, it is a privilege and an honor to have you on the program with me. Thank you so much for joining me. Just in case there are people who are not familiar with you, which I'm sure is fewer than expected. But just in case, I'd like you to reintroduce yourself. How did you meet Mike Lindell? How did that all get started? How are you even involved with the 2020 election?
Well, I'm a scientist. I've been doing science aggressively for about 40 years. And my PhD is in what's called surface electrochemistry, which is just a fancy way of saying I put metal in water and put electricity on it and watch what happens. And it turns out that that field is extremely relevant to just about any field because if you think about it, all reactions, all chemical reactions happen at an interface. They happen at a surface. And so what we do in electrochemistry is we model chemical reactions. And if you think about that, there's a lot of things happening in a solution, a lot of things happening all at once. And then you're controlling that and you're trying to figure out the equations that control that. So what what I've basically spent my career doing is doing that, but also because the mathematics associated with that is ubiquitous in many fields, it happens to particularly apply well to epidemics, and it happens to particularly apply well to election kinds of predictions. And so for years, ever since 1980, which was my first election, I voted for Reagan. I've been modeling every election and I've been modeling every epidemic. And since I'm also a teacher, I use those real life examples to teach my students. I don't just teach them out of the book. And I teach at a special school for really bright youngsters. And I teach their most advanced high school classes. And I always bring in real life examples. And then, of course, in an election year, what would I do? I would bring in the election to be modeling it. And of course, what would you do during COVID year? You'd be modeling it. So that's how everybody got to know me last year. I had social media up to about 150,000 reach on a weekly basis. I was reaching about 150,000 people, something like 60,000 members and more followers and whatnot. But then that's why people got to know me during COVID. And ironically, there's a really funny story about, well, funny, it's just a remarkable story. And that is that in December of 2020, actually, it was actually November of 2019, I meant to say, one of my students came up to me and says, Dr. Frank, I know that it's 2020 and you want to model the election. That's what you usually do. But can we do an epidemic this year instead? And I said, why, Ray? And he says, well, because my parents live in China in a town called Wuhan. And so we started modeling COVID in December of 2019 with my students. And by February, all of our models, which I typically post on my Facebook page because that's sort of a, I'm teaching my students to document what you do. By February and March, I'd way blown past all my friend requirements on Facebook. I started a new page. By March, I had 20,000 people or so following me on Facebook. By the summer, I had, 50,000 people who were members of my page on Facebook with, a big reach. So just with COVID, I kind of already was in the public eye and people were following that. But think about it, it's also an election year. And so politicians around the country were using me as a resource for their campaign speeches. They'd call me up, say, hey, Dr. Frank, where do we stand in my county? Can you coach me on the numbers? Can you coach me where we stand on COVID? Because I need to be able to address my constituents. So sure enough, I would be meeting lots of politicians around the country. Then the election happens and it was stolen. And so a team in Pennsylvania called me and said, hey, Dr. Frank, how come we lost? Everybody knew we should have won. Could you look at our numbers for us? And so I said, sure. So they gave me their data and I looked at all their data. And as I was studying their data in a county in Pennsylvania, Montgomery County, actually one of the most corrupt in the country, it became very obvious to me. I like to describe this as swimming in the data. One of my favorite things to do is to take a lot of data, pour it into a swimming pool and swim around in it. And so as I was swimming in the data, I noticed several anomalies and I began to notice the patterns. And sure enough, I figured out the algorithms, all kinds of algorithms that are operating during the elections that are controlling the election by studying that. And before I knew it, I'd done the state of Pennsylvania and Florida and Ohio and Colorado and North Carolina and just on and on. I've got about 25 states now. So the way you know that it's an algorithm that's controlling the elections is that I can go into a state and I can predict every county. And I shouldn't, and I don't just predict every county like the outcome. I predict every county by every age group. I can tell you how many 18-year-olds voted, how many 19-year-olds voted, how many. In other words, I can predict, and I don't even need to know who's registered. So that's how you know that's how you know that there's an algorithm operating. Now, what's so fun is once I got all my algorithms working so that I was predicting all this stuff, at the time, I had to be quiet about it. Because I was working for teams that were working with the Pennsylvania State Legislature and then working with legal teams that had in some of the Supreme Court cases where I was in some of the Supreme Court cases. So, you know, I wasn't allowed to just go public with all my results at first. And so I was, sorry, my computer's screaming at me. You can edit that out later. So let me go back.
You couldn't say these things because you were working with court cases and legislatures. And so then what happened?
You're exactly correct. I couldn't talk about it in public yet. I was specifically directed to be mum about it at the time. But then when Kathy Barnett, who's the person I was working for, it was her election we were trying to fix. She made the call based upon the performance of the Pennsylvania State Legislature and the legal system there that they were never going to give her a remedy. So she said, okay, I'm just going to let this go. I'm going to begin running for the U.S. Senate. So she kind of said, okay, I'm going to close the book on that and move on. But I wasn't ready to give up the election. And so she traded me to the Lindell team. And so I presented my results to a team of attorneys, four different teams of attorneys, plus four technical people. And they put me through the ringer. And once I got through that, the very next day, Lindell's team called me and said, we want you down in our studios tomorrow. So I got in an airplane. I flew down there. I started working with their team. And Mr. Lindell wanted to record me, you know, 2 hours of studio time where he was recording me, and they wanted to edit about 20 minutes of my work and put it into their upcoming docu-movie that they were preparing called Absolute Interference. But about 10 minutes into that interview, Mr. Lindell stood up and said, stop the cameras, reset everything. We're going to do a whole hour just on Dr. Frank. And so it was pretty cool. They made the docu-movie Scientific Proof.
Yeah.
And what's so fun about that, if you watch that movie, you know, people are somewhat critical of Mike after that. They'll say, hey, you know, Mr. Lindell talked too much. You need to let Dr. Frank talk more. Except you got to understand, he's hearing it for the first time and he is freaking out. And he's like, well, wait a minute. What about this? What about this? And so he's like way interacting with me and you're seeing pure Mr. Lindell, that is exactly who he is.
No idea that was the first time he heard that info because I saw you on both documentaries.
Yes.
And so he first put out the Absolute Interference and then
Absolute
he put
Proof
out,
was the first movie. Absolute
right,
Proof
but,
was the first movie.
Yeah. But as far as you're concerned, because I
Scientific
saw that
Proof.
One.
Scientific Proof was next.
Was it next? Because I
Yes.
thought I saw you first on on
Well, you might
Absolute
have seen me first on
Interference.
Interference, but Scientific Proof was the second one.
Oh, it was. Okay.
Yeah.
So did he broadcast that second and the
Yes.
Scientific Proof and then
Yes.
okay, because I saw both documentaries.
You just might have seen them in backwards order, but it doesn't really hurt. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. And when I'm hearing you, I'm like, what the heck?
Yes.
I'm like, I was thinking how brilliant you are. And
Oh,
thank
thank you.
God the world goes around and there's people that love mathematics because you can't do your job without mathematics. Because
Well,
I couldn't do that. I'm like, I don't love math that much, but you
that's
do.
I
So thank
love
God for
mathematics.
you.
I love it. I was made for this. There's a funny story that goes along with that. About, I don't know, originally I had 2 hours of studio time with Mr. Lindell, and I was supposed to teach him for an hour, and then we were going to record for an hour, and then they were going to cut 20 minutes out of that for Absolute Interference. That's what was supposed to happen. But he was late. He didn't get till like 10 o'clock. And he just walked in and he's like, just start, and it was funny because that's why everything was raw. I mean, it was just like right out of, I'm just showing him whatever I had been working on at the time. And it was so fun. But after about an hour and a half or so, he had to step out of the room. He had to answer a phone call or go potty. I don't know, but he had to step out of the room. And when he was out of the room, I'm just sitting there patiently waiting at the broadcast desk. And I hear this voice. It's like a voice of God, Dr. Frank, are you a physicist? And I'm like, whoa, what? Where did that come from? And I didn't realize about Mary Fanning, the producer of the movie, was FaceTiming the whole thing, and I didn't realize it. Oh, hi, Mary, nice to meet you, Doug Frank here. So we got to know each other a little bit. And she says, and I said, why are you asking me if I'm a physicist? And she says, well, in December we had a physicist looking at these data, and he said it was obvious to him that there was an algorithm operating. But it would take a physicist to figure it out. And she's exactly right. There's a certain way of thinking. So not only do I love math and I love swimming in the data, but I think naturally in a certain way where you observe a phenomenon, you find the equations that describe that phenomenon. This is exactly how a physicist works. And then you do experiments to confirm that your equations are predictive. And sure enough, that was the next thing I had done. After we had found the algorithms and demonstrated that they were working and predictive, we actually started pounding the pavement and finding the shadow voters in the counties that we were working in. It was working perfectly. I could predict, within a percent or two where we were finding the shadow voters and everything. So that's how we knew that, I wasn't just lucky. Well, you don't just get lucky with the
No.
mathematics. I was predicting everything everywhere. And so we knew it was working. So that's basically what I had done. I sort of back calculated the algorithms. And I like to tell people, it's like, don't freak out about that word algorithm. It's just a recipe. It's a set of steps. Computers are dumb. They can't do anything. They only follow instructions. So, and since I'm also a programmer, it's like everything about this is just like right in my wheelhouse. And my son saw me working on COVID last March, and I was sitting there hammering away on my laptop, and he just looked at me and did the facepalm. He's like, "Dad, you were just made for this." He's right. God made me for this moment. I
He
mean,
did.
everything about me just absolutely fits this situation.
It does. He really did. I just think it's amazing how God is using people that are not ordinary heroes, that you think would been the ones to have solved the issues or figure these things out, like people you normally would have thought, he's using professors, he's using scientists, he's using pillow makers. I mean, he's using the craziest characters to
That's
bring
such a
all this
great
to
comment.
life. I mean,
That's a go ahead.
it's amazing because you said that you've been following political
Elections. I've been predicting
elections.
elections since 1980. Yeah.
Now that's not something most people do. What got you
No.
started to do that? Because God putting this into you, it had to be God putting a desire to do this into you because he knew a day like this was going to come and your information was going to be vital to what's going on today. But what got you started in all that? Where did you ever think there was suspicious elections before that got you started, or you're just curious how
Well, when I
that
had calculus in high school, my senior year, I was that was also an election year, and I was like, I wonder, because math, because calculus, mathematics is not a set of skills. Mathematics is a way of thinking. You know, it thinking of mathematics as skill is like thinking of writing as spelling. It's you know, spelling is what you need to be able to do in order to do writing. But spelling itself, I mean, there are some people that trip out on spelling. I get it. But spelling is not writing. Writing is something much more profound. Mathematics is like that. Mathematics is very profound. It's a huge way, a powerful way of thinking. And calculus is just like, or arithmetic are subsets of mathematics. Okay. And so when I was taking calculus, I understood something profound about it, that it wasn't just a skill, it's a way of thinking. And when I started using that way of thinking all around me, in the world around me, in elections, in sociology, and I started applying it. I started seeing how that way of thinking, ironically, that was the year AIDS, the AIDS epidemic was also surging. And I grew up in Northern California.
Under Dr. Fauci's watch, by the way, just to throw that in, continue, sir.
Oh, very interesting. I didn't know that. Thank you for teaching me that. So I was living in Northern California, just north of San Francisco. And of course, the AIDS epidemic was huge there. That was like one of the epicenters of it. So here I am, I'm a high school senior, I'm learning calculus. It's an election year coming up. We've got an AIDS epidemic, and I'm thinking in calculus for the first time in my life. So I'm thinking, you know, how does, and the ways of thinking are like, well, gee, I can understand the election because I can put it in this context of calculus. Oh, gee, I can understand this epidemic because I can put it in the context of calculus. Mm-hmm. So that started me down that road. And then, of course, I'm in college next. And while I'm in college, Reagan's running for election, and I'm learning. I'm in second year calculus. I skipped first year calculus when I went to college. So I'm right into second year calculus. And guess what they're doing? Differential equations. Are you kidding? Differential equations are such a powerful way to predict elections. So I'm using my differential equations immediately applying it to the epidemic, which is only heating up in California and heating up because of the election. So that's how I got started. And it was like a perfect setup. And, you know, I have to just say, I'm a scientist and I'm analytical. You can tell. I like to think ahead, plan ahead, organize my life, do things rationally. But I got to tell you, for the last couple of years, I've learned something interesting about the way God works in my life. I'm almost afraid to make choices. I don't want to steer myself right now. I'm thinking of myself as a leaf floating on a river, and wherever it goes, that's where I'm going. I'm almost afraid to steer myself because how many things have happened to me in the last couple of years, or in my whole life, like I just described to you. My whole life that have brought me to this moment to be like the perfect person for this. Mm-hmm. And I had nothing to do with those decisions. I had nothing to do with the fact that I learned calculus in my senior year, mm-hmm. that there was an AIDS epidemic that year, mm-hmm. that there was an election that year, that I was be born with this sort of mind and the way I think. And so for me to start tinkering with that, you know, maybe I'm just going to back off and let God kind of decide where I'm heading. And obviously it's working. Dude, I gave this the keynote speech at the president's rally on Saturday.
Yes, let's talk about that. I've been catching glimpse of it. It's been everywhere. So tell me about that. How cool to stand on a stage with the president of the United States. Out of all the presidents there ever was, he is the one that I have wanted to meet the most. I want to shake his hand. I want to give him a hug. I even wrote him a letter when all this stuff was going down. Probably never saw it. But I'm like, I just need to tell this man because I felt like he was getting beat up so much for the last 4 years. He didn't deserve it. And a lesser man would have collapsed. God chose him because he was a man that could stand all that abuse that came his way. Yes. And then I felt like how sad for this man to have lost an election, or should I say an election taken from him. And I felt like he was kind of, I don't know, I got the perception that he was sad at that moment, you know, in that time. So I wrote him a letter to try and encourage him. And I would have loved to have, you know, gotten a letter back from the president of the United States. He's the only president I felt that strongly about. And you, sir, get to work with that man. If you were my dad or my husband, I would think you were the coolest husband and coolest dad in the whole wide world. That's what I would think. So tell us about the rally.
That's very sweet of you to say. I think one of the things that makes me a particularly cool dad is that I have a particularly cool daughter. I have three children. 23, 21, 19, and my oldest daughter, Nellie, she has Down syndrome, and she's like the light of my life. And I think people, I take her with me whenever I can, and I took her to the rally, and she was in the stands behind me. And during my speech, I acknowledge her, and she stands up and waves at everybody. She totally gets into it. She loves traveling with me, and she's so fun. And I had two goals on Saturday. One was to be a math teacher and to teach 20,000 plus some math that day, which if you think about it on a Sunday, Saturday afternoon is a remarkable thing. But boy, the audience, it was amazing. They just like, everybody got quiet and watched. It was like they were captivated. I mean, I just can't even imagine teaching 20,000 plus. Somebody posted on my page that I probably broke the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest math class in history.
I think you did. I think they need to give you a call, sir, and an award. Here you go.
I don't need that award, but it was funny at least. So anyway, so I was there, and my first objective was to make sure everybody understood about the election. And then my second objective was to make sure that my president, Donald Trump, got a hug from my daughter because she gives world-class hugs. But
that's awesome.
But the security was too intense, and right. they were super hyper intense. And I don't know whether they were on alert for some particular reason or it was just because it was his first rally back in public and they were being hyper vigilant about it. I'm not sure.
I think that's probably what it was, just because there was so many people. Yeah. I'm sure that's what it was, but maybe so someday. Nellie
didn't get to give him a world-class hug for a world-class president, but nevertheless, I still got, we still acknowledged each other, the president and I, and Nellie got to hug a lot of other people. And just before we left, Mr. Lindell came running back into the tent because, he and I work together. So it's not like it's our first time to be together or anything like that. So he ran into the tent and he says, "Oh, Doug," he says, "we got to get a selfie." And he took out his camera and he took a selfie of me and Nellie and him together. And he mailed it to me the next day. He's a real sweetheart.
I love him because he's so, I love his personality. Me and him, if we could sit in a room together, we would have the best time because his personality and my personality, I think, are very similar.
I agree.
And we would have the greatest time just getting really excited about stuff. And
exactly. You would. I can tell. You would have a great time. And he's I've spent several days with him, in studio and in events and things like that. And he's a genuine Christian with an amazing testimony. And all this election stuff that you see is not being paid for by MyPillow. He's paying for it out of his own money. It's one of the reasons why he was so angry when Dominion sued his company, because his company is 2,500 people and like they have retirement programs and health programs and he protects them. He thinks of them like, like his family. And so he was particularly annoyed that Dominion sued his company. If they had just sued him, maybe he just would have countersued, but
he wanted that. He's like, sue me, Dominion.
Exactly.
Sue me. He was like welcoming it.
So then
I saw that too. He was upset.
And then Dominion sued. I'm sorry. Then MyPillow has sued him. It's not a countersuit. It's a new suit. And it's about lawfare. And Alan Dershowitz is one of the lead attorneys on that, which is interesting. And so that's a big case. And if you look at that, if you downloaded, look at that case, I'm on page two. I'm the first piece of evidence. So,
oh, wow.
So it's the reason why these lawsuits are important is because the legal system is not taking these cases on election fraud. Yeah. And so to get actual cases into court where we can have discovery and the evidence presented in legal briefs in court enters it into the legal record. By the way, that's why what happened in Antrim County with Matt DiPerno is so important.
So important.
Because all the evidence about the machines with the modems and the cell phone cards that are built into the machines, that's all now officially entered into evidence. There's no way anybody can hide that anymore. Anybody can look at that. My analyses for Michigan are entered into the evidence. So when people say there's no evidence, they're wrong.
Right.
In court, it's gone through discovery. It's everything. It's been examined in court. It's real.
Or the other lie is no courts want to hear it. There's no court cases that have proven anything. All the court cases that got dismissed, that's another lie too, because
that's
that is just not true.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
Do you know if if any of Mike Lindell's even making it to discovery yet with any of his court cases?
I do know. And it's we're getting there. We're not there yet.
Okay,
But
good. I'm glad it's moving forward. That's
the briefs have been
America wants
filed.
to know because America is excited about this lawsuit.
Yes.
It's one of the first big ones, and not the only big one, but
Right.
I mean, we haven't had a lot of big cases. Like Antrim County was a huge one
Super
for,
important.
yeah, super important. And I'm hoping that they're going to end up doing an audit. I really hope. I know that there was a lot of affidavits that were signed
Six
and sent.
thousand.
Send to the legislature. So I'm hoping that any day now we're going to hear the news that we're going to have an audit.
Well, let me just comment about that.
Okay.
Because I've been doing this now for a long time, I've had some stinging lessons. My first stinging lesson is that we can't count on our legislatures. They have no appetite for fraud. Our legislatures are not interested in this. The second stinging lesson that I had last year is that our legal system has no appetite for the fraud as well.
Right.
And then the third lesson that I've learned is that politicians don't start parades, people do. So the only way we are going to take our country back, the only way this is going to move forward is when the people rise up. So that's why I'm spending half of my time doing all the calculations and analysis, because there's still a lot more of that to do. And I've been doing that for many states. And each time I do a new state, there are new things to discover and new fraud that we uncover. And then the other half of my time doing things like this, talking to you and traveling the country. I'm going to be in the state of New Hampshire next weekend. And then I'm going to be in the state of Pennsylvania for the Constitutional Convention this weekend. So in other words, I'm constantly traveling. I'm explaining to people what's going on.
Wait, you said Constitutional Convention. There's a Constitutional Convention going on, because I know that like people in my family have been wanting to start one.
Yeah,
in
Pennsylvania. Yeah, and I
what
might
does
have
that mean? Does that mean that
I might have misnamed that?
Oh, okay.
I could look that up, but I think they called it a constitutional convention. It's a 2-day convention. They got all kinds of speakers. They've asked me to come, and I'm going to speak once each day, and then of course
maybe
I'll be
they're calling it that, but it's not an actual constitution. Because I know
That's
that there's
think.
A lot of states that have already tried to start getting a
yes.
constitutional convention,
yeah.
and they're still short some. So they
forgive me if I've
that.
Misnamed that, but I think that's what they're calling it.
Well, they could have called it that. I mean, it sounds good too. And yeah, it is a convention. You talk about the Constitution, boom, you married the two words. There you go.
That's right. And they're great speakers, great lineup of speakers. It's going to be a great event. 2 days, July 5th and July 6th, you know, Monday and Tuesday after July 4th.
Are you speaking there?
Once each day. Yeah. And then I'm with quite a lineup. There are fabulous speakers coming. Andrew Tidelman.
I want to talk about what you said about the legislatures. You were right. Our legislature wasn't going to look into this, but it was the bombardment of the patriots.
Of the people.
Of the people. And we wouldn't let it go. And we wouldn't let it go. We first started with the County Board of Supervisors. Found out how corrupt they are,
yep.
and they wouldn't listen to us.
Right.
And then we took it, not only didn't we didn't stop with them, but we took it a step further and then started bombarding the legislatures. And then a group of patriots started trying to do recall campaigns, and we got super close with our recalls as far as the County Board of Supervisors are concerned. We got super close. But if it wasn't for us signing like affidavits that says,
yes.
You are our indentured servant. You
That's
will
correct.
Do this.
Yes.
If it wasn't for that and us demanding it, they wouldn't have done it.
Right.
And now that they did do it, I mean, they're all behind it now. Well, I mean, as far as the Republicans are concerned, they're behind it now.
They're not really behind it. Trust me.
Well,
they're complying. They're complying because they have to comply.
Right.
The politicians don't start the parades. The people do.
Right.
The politicians join them because otherwise they're toast.
That's pretty much what I'm trying to say, but you said it a lot better than what I said. You did it.
Well, I got to just tell you, you know, I started in Pennsylvania in December of 2020, and I was shocked at how I'm not saying they weren't all patriots. There are a few patriots there that I love to this day. They're good patriots, but they basically are throwing up their hands and, you know, they're too much of a minority. They can't get her done. And by February, I had, you know, when I got traded to the Lindell team, I'd basically written off Pennsylvania. There's no way this state's gonna do anything. And to our point, months later, I get calls from a team in Pennsylvania and they're saying, would you please come out and help us do this audit to vote thing? And I came out there and they were already organizing. They were already on the ground, boots on the ground doing stuff. They just needed some coaching. And so I connected some dots for them and fanned some flames for them. You know, when I'm pretty popular these days, if I show up at an event, 1,000 people will show up. And so I just kind of helped get them going again, but I'm not taking credit. Trust me, I'm not taking credit. These are super moms and our super moms are going to save our country. Because they will not let this go. I'd written off Pennsylvania. They didn't. They stepped up. They've created a parade. Now, guess what? The legislature is going to come over. They have to. Because the people have started the parade.
They have to.
And Pennsylvania may be our first state to flip.
I hope so. Because I know they had delegations come out to the Maricopa County audit. And any moment, I mean, there's going to be any moment we're going to hear preliminary reports of what they found. We don't have it right now, but at any moment, because we just wrapped it up. So I don't know how long it'll take them to get the preliminary reports. But I also think that's going to spark something too. Because we had about, I think it was, I might be wrong, but I think it was close to 20 delegations from all over the United States.
That sounds about right. Sounds about right. I knew of at least 10 or so a couple of weeks ago that had gone. Yeah. So,
and so that made me hopeful that there is going to be more. And that's the thing about COVID, going back to your COVID thing, the reason why they wanted you to separate is because they didn't want this stuff to start a wildfire. That's the whole shelter in place. I will give you permission to see who you want in your own home.
Preach it, sister.
What the hell is that? Big government's going to tell me what I can do in my own home. Who's government? Right. Me or them? I'm government. It's the consent of the governed. It's we the people. Right. So screw you, big government. You're not going to tell me what I'm going to do in my own home. If I want a million people in my own home, I'm going to have a million people in my own home. I'm like, but people are really falling for this. Like, oh, but government said I can't have one person in my home.
You're the government.
Exactly. And it was for this reason alone, because we could start connecting the dots. I mean, I had the stink eye on this COVID thing from the beginning. I'm like, there is something really weird about this whole thing. Yeah, all of a sudden, don't wear masks, wear masks, wear 5,000 masks. Now they're pushing this shot. I mean, it's stay at home. Don't see anybody. We're going to close business. Let me ask you something, Dr. Frank.
Fire.
Don't you believe small business could have done the safety protocols and been open like the big businesses did? How come they shut the big businesses down during COVID? I mean, kept the big businesses open during COVID, but shut the little people down during COVID. I mean, to me, my way of thinking is the small businesses could have done exactly the same thing as big businesses. So why shut the small business down?
Well, because the whole thing was a lie. And it was all about manipulation. And, you know, you mentioned the First Amendment. People always think about the First Amendment in terms of free speech. But the freedom of assembly is the real dangerous thing there. Because when you put people together, when you put patriots together, they get their gander up and they do things. So that, I don't think it's, I mean, yes, the freedom of speech is huge. That's why all the censorship is happening on social media. But the freedom to assemble, that's what's now bringing the country back. It's not just that we can talk to each other. It's that we are assembling and getting motivated. So that's true. And when you think about it, that was sort of the answer, first part answer your question. The second one was about small business. There, you know, for example, people were asking me back in February and March, early in the epidemic of 2020, about masks and things like that. And I knew the science. I'd been studying epidemics my whole life. And I was telling, you know, masks are not effective. There's tons of scientific studies that already show that they're not effective. And also, I know the way that viruses spread and how epidemics spread. How do I know? I've been studying my whole life. Okay. And I'm telling these people, look, all this shutdown stuff, this is the wrong way to think. All this, these masks, it's the wrong way to think. And stop thinking about a vaccine, because real vaccines take 5 to 6 years to develop. I don't care what you say, how fast you go, Mr. President, doesn't matter. A real vaccine takes a lot of time to develop. It's just the nature of the process. There's no way around it. So all these things are make me suspicious. And early on in the epidemic, I was telling people, look, just just chill. Let's give our governments the benefit of the doubt for a month or so, because yeah, it's new. It's new for all of us and nobody knows for sure what's going on. So let's give them the benefit of the doubt. And I think I was duped like the rest of us, willing to comply for a month.
Mm-hmm.
The right. lesson, the lesson is you never, and I mean never with all capital letters, N-E-V-E-R, you never give government power. Because right. if you do, they never give it back.
Right.
You have to, we have to wrest it out of the hands, out of their dead hands. We have to wrest the power back. It is so hard to take government power back from government. And you're seeing that now. We have all these little tyrant dictators all over the country who aren't willing to give up their power. And the way they controlled us and the way they kept control is exactly what you put your finger on, through small business. Because small business is really the energy, is really the engine of our country. It's the mom and pop stores. It's the guy who does the landscaping. It's the plumber. It's the electronic. Think about it. I can't, if I'm a plumber, I can't even come to your house and fix your pipes because of COVID. In other words, they're stopping everything, they're shutting everything down. And it was all a farce. Because viruses spread the way viruses spread. Yeah, I was, since I was modeling 50 states and 30 countries, I was tracking it everywhere in the world. And I knew the way the virus was spreading. I knew how various mitigation strategies were working. And Australia did an amazing shutdown, a remarkable shutdown. Boom! They just like shut their whole country down right at the beginning. And I think I'm working from memory now. It's been a year. I think about 100 people died, and then that first wave stopped. Okay, great. Then everybody thought, okay, we're great. And then they were quiet for a while, pacified for a while. Did you see their second wave? Massive. Why? You have to think of it like, you have to think of a virus like a forest fire. If a forest fire comes through and burns all the trees down, okay, then the next time the virus comes along, there's no fuel. It can't really get going. You know, there might be a bush here or there, or, you know, or maybe a tree survived, or maybe a tree was killed in the first fire that now can burn. But basically the tinder is gone. If you squelch every forest fire, then whenever a lightning strike comes along, you're going to have a massive forest fire, because the small fires clean up all the tinder that's on the forest floor. And that's why, for example, why California has had massive forest fires in the last several years. It's because they've tried to stop every fire, and then they don't do the forest management where they clean out the dead wood and the tinder. So every time a lightning strike, which is normal and happens thousands of times a year in the mountains in California, every time there's a lightning strike, you have a massive fire. It has nothing to do with climate change. It has to do with poor forest management. Okay, well, now take that analogy over to the COVID thing. Viruses spread. That's what they do. Okay, they do. And you can't stop that. To think that you're going to stop a force of nature by shutting everything down is a huge error. The best way to fight a virus is to not fight it. The best way to fight a virus is to protect the vulnerable and let everybody else catch it. Let's have a big spin the bottle contest. You know,
doctor, don't you remember the days when your parents would send you to the kid's house who had the chicken pox?
Yes, that was me.
Every parent was like, "Go get the chicken pox."
Exactly. And okay, so what? You get shingles later in life. All right, but it's better to do that than it is to give somebody a vaccine. And let me tell you why. It's not that the vaccine is a bad strategy. In some cases, it's a really good strategy. But think about it. Vaccines have risk associated with them. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's not me making that up. I mean, if you go to Google and you say, what, you know, how many people are injured by vaccines, it'll come right out and say 1 in 1 million vaccines result in an injury. And by the way, that's a low estimate, but let's just say it's 1 in 1 million. Mm-hmm. Well, that means that every million people we vaccinate, you're going to injure somebody. So vaccines come with risk. So the question is, you have to weigh. You have to say, well, is it worth the risk of the vaccine? And so you have to do it. It's like driving.
Right.
Driving comes with a risk. But right. you drive to work, you drive to the right. grocery store, and a certain number of people are going to be killed in cars. But you weigh the risk, don't you? You do the risk-benefit calculation. You say, okay, I'm going to take the risk, and I'm going to drive carefully. I think it's exactly the same with COVID. The risk, especially to 50 years and less, is negligible. unless you have a mitigating condition, you know, have a comorbidity of some kind. Okay, then those people we need to protect. Okay, I get it. Let's protect those people. And some of our older people that are infirmed, absolutely, let's protect them. And then all the rest of us, let's have a chicken pox party.
Exactly.
And you know, I've been joking and saying, let's play spin the bottle because we gotta kiss each other. We gotta have a massive spin the bottle party. Everybody kisses everybody. We all get sick. And yes, some people will die in that. There's no question about it because some people will have a condition we didn't think about or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But then you essentially get the herd immunity throughout the culture, and then you can bring your dangerous, vulnerable people back in, and then you've. That would be the right way to address it. And that's what Sweden tried to do. And they did it with some degree of success. It's interesting because the population of Sweden is about 11 million. The population of Ohio is about 11 million. And the cities are about the same. The populations are about the same. There are a lot of things that are about the same. And Ohio did massive shutting down businesses, huge restrictions, closing our schools, blah, 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 all these horrible things. Sweden didn't do all those things. Look at the two curves for the epidemics. They're the same. So in other words, all the shutdown stuff, bad strategy.
For nothing.
And so anyway, I was a little, you could tell I'm a professor. I could talk forever, but
it's all for nothing. And I really think the mask thing was just something to get in your head to say, like, you don't know this person. Because you covered half your face, and so now you're unknown to one another. You can't tell if the person's mad or smiling.
Smart.
And then it also was like, you have no freedom of speech. I'm covering your mouth.
Good symbol. Good metaphor.
That's the word I was looking for. It was all a metaphor just to kind of like get in your brain a little bit and just to further indoctrinate people into what was the truth. And I'm calling it right now the proverbial burning of the books. You know, when, you know, throughout history, we would see regimes come in and they'd burn books because that's where people got knowledge. And if people had knowledge, then they could fight against the regime. So right now we're seeing that with YouTube purging all the conservative voices on Facebook and Twitter. Oh, yeah.
My YouTube page was taken down 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Man, there was just yesterday or the day before that got taken down too. So if we'll build up other platforms, it's fine. Those people, they wanted to fund themselves. That's fine too. You can fund yourself. That's all right. But you know, the news stations are losing credibility. They're losing viewerships like crazy. I'm very proud of some of the reporters and anchors coming out. Like we had one here in Arizona I worked with at Fox 10. She was running for governor. She came out and kind of said what was going on in the newsroom, and then one in Houston and one in Michigan. And I think as more and more take that brave route and say, I'm not going to say the news anymore because I don't want to lie to people, I think it'll wake more people up to doing the right thing. But it takes bravery, and bravery is something that you're doing every single day because it's not easy to come against the things you're coming against. I think it's brave for Mike Lindell to come out and what he's saying. Frankly, sometimes I'm scared to come out and say what I'm saying because I don't want to get shut down or, you know, being attacked or something like that. So even this, but my dad's last sermon, he said, use the tools that God put in your hand. And from the time I was like 3 or 4 years old, God put a microphone in my hand. And maybe it's for such a time as this that I, whatever audience, great or small, and I don't care if it's 5, I don't care if it's 5,000, if that 5 people do tremendous things because I've encouraged them, I've given them hope, I've drawn this picture of hope that we're not defeated, that we are winning. But you'll never see that in some parts of social media, and you'll never see that on the news or on TV. You're going to see that we're losing at every front. But I don't see that. Dr. Frank, you've been around the country. Your hand is on the pulse, more closer than I am. Would you say that we're winning? Would you say that, what's the census of the country as a whole, as you go talk to people, as you go, are they hopeful or are they downtrodden? What's the pulse like around our nation?
For months, I've been saying that God is either going to judge us or redeem us as a country. And if you remember during the Revolutionary War, only 3% of Americans fought it. So all we need today are 3% to fight this revolutionary war. But I've been traveling the country, state by state, sometimes county by county. And I can tell you that the bonfire is growing. So I no longer doubt that God is redeeming America. Because, you know, it's, if you remember the story in the Old Testament, since you're a PK, you'll know it. I didn't know that about you too. You just said that. If you remember the story in the Old Testament, when Abraham negotiates with God about Sodom, and Abraham says, you know, gee, God, if there are 50 people left in Sodom, will you not destroy it? And God says, okay, it's a deal. And then he says, well, what if there are only 20, would you not destroy it? And Abraham negotiates God down to 10 people. If there are 10 people left, will you not destroy Sodom? And God agrees. And then Abraham and, you know, Lot and Lot's family, they all leave. They leave Sodom, and then what happens? Boom! Hellfire and brimstone. You know, God takes it out. So there must not have been 10 people left, because God keeps his promises.
Right.
So the, you know, that's a diminishing thing, right? I don't see a diminishing thing in America. I see the troops are growing. And what's so, you know, for instance, when I was at the rally on Saturday night, when I'm in Ohio. I have a program that I host in Ohio with 5,000 views twice a week. This is a big program that I do. It's called the Ohio Post Depressor. And, you know, a lot of people know me from that. They didn't even know I was working on election work.
I caught some of your shows, because weren't they on YouTube?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so the idea was that here I am speaking to in Ohio at a president's rally to a bunch of patriots. I was shocked. Almost there, you know, how many out of, you know, 20,000 plus people never had heard of me before, never knew who I was before. And they were quiet and they listened. So in other words, as the word still hasn't gotten out, the fires are burning everywhere. But you know what? They're starting to heat up, because now the word's really getting out. And now that I have a national stage that, you know, with speaking before the president spoke, now the word, it's like accelerating. So it was, if you had asked me before the president's speech what I thought about the country, I would say, oh man, we got, do you know, in Pennsylvania, those teams that I've been working with out there, Lori Shoup, she's just a great supermom. You can tell I really love my supermoms. They have 100,000 signatures from 40 teams in 40 counties in Pennsylvania. They are smoking. We got teams out in the state of Washington. We got Lacey Clark out there.
State of Washington.
It is coming alive. There's a team.
Praise out there.
God. WCU. There's a team out there. I have a team building up right now in Oregon, Montana, North, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, Florida.
Is Colorado Oklahoma. Anyone?
Colorado's huge. Are you kidding?
Really?
I was out there like 6 or 7 weeks ago. The supermom out there is Sharona Bishop. Amazing. She has a website, America's Mom. She is like cream of the crop supermom. And what I've been trying to do is in each state, find that one supermom who's like, you know, she ain't stopping for nothing. And then I connect all the dots. I provide all the resources. They'll usually arrange a talk. I come out, you know, I was in Colorado for 3 days. I tell you, Sharona Bishop, she worked my butt off. I had three talks a day for 3 days in a row, and she put me all over the state. But think about what that's doing. That's spreading the word. It's motivating the troops. It's building the bonfire. And that was 6-7 weeks ago. The state of Washington was like 4 weeks ago. They're coming alive out there. So state after state are catching fire. So that's when you say, what's the pulse of the country? The pulse of the country is we are coming alive.
I agree.
Amazing. State by state.
Yes. Praise the Lord. Now I get offended when people call my state purple. And for a while I believed it. Arizona. No, we're totally red. And the only reason why we've been turning purple is those stupid evil machines that we have, and I want them banned. And I do foresee somewhere in our future, hopefully our legislature will ban them once and for all. Can I correct you a little bit? Yeah.
It's not just the machines. It's the registration databases. They've inflated the registration databases ahead of time. They're filling your registration rolls with people that are not real voters, and they're putting in the ballot. So in other words, it's not just the machines. The machines are an important component. Mm-hmm. I'm not negating that. But before the election, they fill your registration rolls with tons of people that aren't real voters. So it makes it look like you're purple. Do you see what I mean? Because you've got a whole bunch of voters that are not really voters, and they're putting in ballots for them. And then after the election, they remove those phantom voters again. And so that's one of the problems. It's like, if you were to go online today and download your state registration databases, they've already cleaned them up. You got to get the databases back near the election. And that is a huge aspect. But I 100% agree with you. You got to get rid of the machines. But it's not just that. You also have to get rid of the centralized registration databases. You need to have them managed at the county and precinct level by local people. And they can't be electronic because they're all hacked. You know, it's like when I was a boy, I remember the PTA ladies coming around, knocking on doors, finding the, you know, registering every household, making sure they knew everybody. And then, you know, 6 Democrats, 6 Republicans, 12 PTA ladies, they would, you know, travel in pairs, and everything was on the up and up. I'm sure you had some, you know, fraud now and then, but nothing wholesale. And then on election day, my mom would take me by the hand and I'd go to the polls with her and watch her vote. And guess who's running the election at the local precinct? Those same 12 supermoms. And guess who's counting the ballots at the end of the day? Those same 12 supermoms. That's a secure election. Mm-hmm. You've verified every voter. Mm-hmm. Every voter isn't voting in person. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a few absentee ballots, which are perfectly legitimate, mm-hmm. especially for our military people. And then they count it by hand and they all agree. How can that be wrong?
Right.
That is a great election right mm-hmm. there. And that's, but your politicians don't like that kind of election.
No.
Because they can't control it.
That's right.
That's why they want the machines. The machines give them the control. Most people don't know that during the election, before, during, and after, throughout the entire time, the politicians know every person who has voted and hasn't voted. That's public. That is publicly known. Most people don't know it, but it's Mm-mm. the truth. And Mm-mm. the way they know it is because of the electronic poll books. So they know everybody who has voted and hasn't. And they can say, oh, gee, we don't have enough people turning out from precinct XYZ. Let's get out there and pound the pavement out there and get our voters out. You know, but you have to realize, once you're giving them the information, you're not just giving it to them. You're Mm-mm. giving it to the bad guys, who then also know who hasn't voted. And they can put in phantom ballots for them. And we have to take away that knowledge from our politicians. They should have to wait and sweat it out just like the rest of us.
Right.
To the end of the day.
Well, this is something new to me. I didn't know about this. So this is brand new information to me about that. I mean, continue, because this is really, yeah.
It sounds good. Vote early, vote early. No. You vote early. You're just telling the bad guys who's not going to vote, so that they know who to pump in ballots for. Mm. Voting early is not a good thing. I mean, it could be a good thing if it was completely blind.
Right.
But it's not completely blind. Mm. It's all hacked.
So, wow.
And you know, that's one of these things, like, it's the bright, shiny object. One of the ways they defeat us is by distracting us. And so, you know, like, for example, recounts. People are saying, oh, we need to recount. Recounts are seldom productive. Because if you think about it, if you inflate the registration database and you pump in a bunch of false ballots, the machines don't have to cheat. Mm-hmm. The machines can just count the ballots. And so after the election, the machines and the ballots match. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the cheat. The cheat was that you put in a bunch of false ballots to begin with. So you have to check the ballots, and you have to check the registration rolls and find those phantom ballots.
I've heard that there's going to be not a census. What do they call it when they go around knocking on doors, checking about
canvassing.
I heard that that's happening here.
And Liz Harris led a huge movement of that in your state. And that is exactly what you need. I think Doug Frank thinks you need that more than all the rest of the audit you're doing. I've spoken to the team leaders of your audit. Mm-hmm. And their strategy is the best you can do, I think, under the given circumstances. But it's not necessarily going to yield what you want it to yield. There, in your state of Arizona, there are 49 companies that print your ballots. 49. So to be able to expect to be able to figure out which ballots are real and which ones are not when you're looking at them, when there are 49 companies printing them, That's a challenge.
One thing that's going forward in our state is they are good as look into printing brand new ballots that have a lot of hidden features in there, so that it'll be easier to detect if it's a fake ballot or not. And it's only going to cost a few cents to make it, kind of like the dollar bill. There's
Yeah,
a UV portion, and then there's like
to
things
stop
that are
counterfeiting. Yeah,
yeah, the counterfeiting. They're going to be
but
moving
once again,
towards that.
Remember, that's not the problem. Remember, the problem is that you've got a whole bunch of counterfeit voters, and that's a huge problem, because you know your state isn't the only one that uses the specific paper and the specific counterfeit paper. Multiple states use the same.
Well, we're moving towards that. We haven't done that yet, and it's in front of the legislature right now. But speaking of legislature, and sorry to go back a little bit, but I did find it kind of interesting that the time that COVID hit and the lockdowns hit was right after legislative session. So the only one in charge was one person in each state to take care of all the issues, and they refused to call a special session. I just found that very interesting. I know our legislature wanted to come back in session, but there wasn't enough votes for them to call themselves in, and our governor was not going to call them into session. And so they did pass some legislation that couldn't happen again, that if there was an executive emergency orders, that they have to come back within a certain amount of time, which I was so happy, because a lot of Arizonans were so angry with the things our governor was doing during that time. So just like you said, you give the government a little freedom, you're not going to get it back. And I'm looking at our neighbors in the north and the pastors that are getting thrown into prison and they're going into confinement where they can't even, they're not even in general public, they're all by themselves, you know, solitary confinement for preaching the gospel, for opening their church, so that you can go and abort your child, you can go get high and buy weed, and you can go buy furniture at IKEA, but you can't go to church. I mean, it goes back to your thing about assembly, and it goes back to there's a higher being, and they don't want the higher being, because the higher being puts them in check. They want to be the highest being, which is the original sin of mankind, always wanting to be like God, right?
One of the things about the epidemic that was so shocking to me personally in March and April of last year was how everybody complied so quickly. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, if the president had gotten up one day and said, everybody, we need to protect ourselves because this epidemic is coming in, I wouldn't have expected the whole country to just go, click, the switch is off. Well, later I learned something, and maybe you haven't heard this either. At the federal level, predictions were made for every county in the country of how many people were going to die. Wow. And they were ridiculous predictions, as we all know. They were sent all on the same day to every community leader in the country. Under penalty of law, they were not allowed, it was classified. They were not allowed to share the fact that they had received that notice or share any of the information in that notice. So in other words, our community leaders around the country were all told all at once, you must shut down. This is how many people that are going to die. And that's why it was so instantly effective. And most people don't know that that's what happened, because most of our public leaders are not saying anything about it, because if they do, they go to jail. But that's how that happened at the beginning. And I know, because I've seen the documents with my own eyes. I've seen the predictions with my own eyes. And I didn't see them at that point. I didn't see them till later. When that all comes out, in other words, it sounds like a conspiracy, but it's not. There's hard evidence for it. When you realize, and you mentioned what made me think of it was you mentioned that it was after the sessions closed. So everybody's, think about it. How do you get everybody to comply instantly? You minimize the number of people that have control, and then you control them instantly by a very effective method, which was basically telling, I mean, how would you feel? Pretend you're a community leader, you know, let's say you're the mayor of a city, and you get a letter this morning that says within a month, a third of your people are going to be dead. Okay. If you got that letter from the federal government and it carried the weight of the federal health department telling you that a third of your people are going to be dead, are you going to take that lightly? No way. You're going to say, whoa, what do I do? How do I manage this? We're going to have dead bodies in the streets. We're going to have this. We're going to have that. How do I manage this? You're going to act immediately. that's what they did to us as a country. It was a lie. It was a lie from the beginning. It was a manipulation. And that's a huge issue that I don't think has received enough public attention. And when, as it does, and that's one of the things I'm trying to spread the message, as that comes out, I think there's going to be, we need to put some people in jail. And worse, I think maybe, I mean, traitors, we put them against the wall in firing squad. I mean, that's what we do with traitors.
Oh, yeah.
You think of the damage to this country and the damage to our children. Oh, you know, one of the things, there's a term in medical science called, in epidemiology, called excess deaths. Excess deaths, and you can go to the CDC webpage and look at these data. Excess deaths are when you have deaths beyond what is normal. And I've studied the excess deaths throughout our country and all the numbers for that. And I was doing all the calculus on that. You know me, I like big data sets and analyzing data. I was doing that back in November. And in 2020, we had, at that point in time, we had about 400,000 excess deaths. These are people who have more than usual. And about 300,000 of those were credited to COVID. But there was another 100,000 that were not accredited to COVID, and people don't talk about that. But let me tell you about that 100,000 that were not accredited to COVID. 30,000 of those excess deaths were older people who died who had Alzheimer's. They died because they were abandoned in rest homes. And, you know, it's like we had an epidemic of Alzheimer's. No, we had an epidemic of negligence. We killed 30,000 people with Alzheimer's in our country last year by the way we addressed COVID, not from COVID, the way we addressed COVID. We have tons more people dying of drug abuse, mm-hmm. tons more people dying of suicide, mm-hmm. tons more people dying of, you know, back in March and April, people stopped going to the hospitals because they were afraid. So they weren't getting their checkups. They weren't getting their treatments. We had tons more cancer deaths than usual.
My friend was one of them.
Because they weren't getting their normal medical check. So in other words, those excess, that 100, there are 100,000 people, I'm speaking round numbers, but you're getting the idea. There are 100,000 people that died in America last year directly because of the lie of COVID. And I'm not saying COVID isn't real. COVID's real.
Right, of course.
The other 300,000 people died of COVID. Okay, right. Fair enough.
Right.
But because we were lying about it instead of telling people the truth about it,
right.
we also killed another 100,000 people.
That's right.
And that's not okay.
And now we have the VAERS report about the vaccine, and it's killing even more and permanently injuring more. There was just a Fox report on that where the women were going in front of a panel talking about they're still alive, but they're severely injured and possibly permanently injured. But I remember in October, I was so grateful that there was some neighbors that were still willing to trick or treat for my little children. And as I was going around, I was hearing from one lady who was in psychiatrist, I think, something like that. And she was almost in tears because she was getting calls on a regular basis from parents whose teenagers wanted to kill themselves. And all the mental hospitals were completely full for adolescents. So what was her only choice? Yeah. She felt like she had to turn all these parents that were desperate to keep their kids alive because COVID was causing such a deep depression in them that they were going to take their own lives. And it was hard to hear that. I mean, I was kind of on the verge of tears just hearing that because I felt so alone too. Here I lost my friend. Of course, you know, no one wanted to go to the hospital because it turned into like a prison. You couldn't go visit your relatives and they were left alone. Yeah. It's a horrible time. My grandmother was in, what do they call them?
Rest home.
Kind of, sort of. Like she can do her. She has her own apartment, but she's in one of those senior living things.
Yeah.
She had to be locked in. She couldn't leave her apartment.
That's not okay.
No,
that's not okay.
And her neighbor committed suicide because of that. And we couldn't go visit her, and she couldn't come visit us. And
that's
it was horrible.
No, it's not okay.
It's not okay.
You know, with our adolescents, the rates of suicide ideation is up a factor of 4, and the actual suicides are doubled. So So, it, you know, I was talking about excess deaths. That's some of them. But think about it. Deaths is not the only measure of life. It's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We are injuring an entire generation of children. It's going to take decades for the ripple of this to settle out. It's not okay that we're injuring our children. It's mm-hmm. not okay.
No, it's not. I agree. I mean, I felt bad for all the parents who had those big life moments like graduations and kids with proms.
My kid graduated from high school. Did get to have a graduation.
That is so sad because you can't get that back. You can't recreate a graduation. No. Okay, it's been 2-5 years later. Let's redo that. It's not the same.
No, it's not the same.
Or those seniors that was their last year to play their sport.
Yeah, right.
You know, all those things. It was just... So they want the second wave to come in now. They're talking about the not second wave, but another variant. And now there's rumors about the CDC might change their mask policy. You know what? I'll give the CDC a middle finger.
Never wear a mask again. They're stupid. No. Just don't do it. Don't vote their stupid way. Don't wear their stupid masks and don't take their stupid shots. Just don't do it. Just don't comply. Make them put you in jail. Let them take you to court. We'll get you some attorneys.
That's how we're going to stand our ground. Okay, you that's fooled right. us once, but you're not going to fool us
never
twice.
Again. Never again.
Because most of the people who had COVID are like, that was it.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there was the extremes, but the vast majority of the people in the middle, I know a lot of people, almost all my friends, and like most of the people I know have had COVID, and they were like, it was just like a cold.
Yeah, right. Well, it's fair to say, I mean, COVID is deadly, just like the flu is deadly.
Right.
I think it's more deadly than the flu because the flu is only typically 30,000 to 60,000 people a year die from it. So it's a little more deadly than that, of course. And I'm not trying to minimize that. And I'm not telling anybody to be risky. But the problem is that it wasn't just about that. It was about all the government. And I mean, think about it. During an epidemic, that's not when you suspend the Constitution. That's when you need the Constitution the most. You need to defend it. So that, anyway, here you go.
I just thought it was also funny timing. It came out around election time.
Not funny.
I don't know.
Not funny. No, I think, and I don't necessarily think that, there's some smoky room back there where, these, old guys with cigars are making decisions and conspiring for the world. I'm not that kind of a thinker. I just think that a lot of times when things combine, when multiple things kind of line up, then it's particularly bad. That it's kind of, maybe somebody might say, Dr. Frank, you have rose-colored glasses on. But I don't necessarily think that somebody deliberately did all this at once. I think people just seized upon the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I think. But I don't know. I don't have good evidence one way or the other. That's just the way I
think. Well, yeah, I'm kind of like that too. I've been telling my viewers, I'm like, coincidences only go so far. At some point, there's manipulation that gets involved. Yeah. It just so happened this, and then it just so happened that at some point, someone put their dirty little hands in it.
That's right. That's the way I look at it.
That's how I feel it. When there's a lot of coincidences, you got to go back and
Now, the election is no coincidence. I mean, there are a few people in the world who controlled the election in our country. You don't need to have like dirty boards of elections people. You don't have to have people dirty at the local level. Basically everybody was hacked. You just think the election was hacked and manipulated, and it only takes a few people with a lot of computers and some resources, and they can do the whole country. And they did. And so, that is definitely a conspiracy. And I don't even have to argue that. I can just show you the data. And the data
The proof.
Oh, yeah.
People want to see the proof. Okay, Dr. Frank can show you the proof. Mike Lindell can show you the proof. And pretty soon Arizona is going to show you the proof. Dr. Frank, what's up next for you? Are there more rallies that you're going to be speaking at?
Yeah, I'm booked for about 2 months.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, now, people are hungry to understand. And like I said, that is my mission in life now. And I didn't, when I was young, Vietnam had just finished and I was going into graduate school and I had to sign up for the selective service, but I didn't have to serve a tour anywhere. And I always kind of felt like I got to enjoy my country and I never had to pay for it. And, I was always on scholarships and, everything was paid for me. And so I tell my military friends now you know, you guys served your tour then, I'm serving my tour now. This is me doing my job for my country. I'm fighting for my country. People say, oh, well, you know, you're at risk. Yeah, but every time they say that, I just think about my buddies in a foxhole getting shot at, you know?
That's right.
And I feel like, well, you know, okay, people have died for this. People have sacrificed for hundreds of years. Think about the people that signed the Declaration of Independence. People have sacrificed so much that right. we can live free. It's my turn. And I volunteered for many months, you know, no pay, just me fighting for my country. But then once Mr. Lindell met me, he's been financing my work
nice.
Now. So, you know, I'm not so, people say, well, there's some people in that I don't read you that way, which is why I'm happy to be on your program. There's some people that are in this for the money. Mm-hmm. I'm not that guy. I'd be doing it for volunteer. But I have to admit that Mr. Lindell is financing a lot of the work I'm doing now. And so you need to buy his pillows.
He's for sure. I'm happy.
They're good pillows anyway.
Yeah. I've been buying his products and I'm happy to support him. I was actually, you might want to tell Mike Lindell this. I literally wrote letters to the big box stores telling them how disappointed I was in their decision for canceling him because he did nothing wrong. And that they're hurting his employees who did nothing wrong. So I was fighting for Mike Lindell on behalf of him, and I don't even know the guy, but I know enough that he cares about my country, and if he cares about my country, I'm going to help him. And yeah. So I've been buying his products, and then I wrote the big box stores when it was first getting canceled because he's an amazing person, and I'm glad God's using such a great guy. And he's another one who's like Donald Trump, whereas he's getting attacked a lot, but God put something in him that he's able to withstand all those attacks, and God bless him for being able to be a strong individual in that way, because it's not easy what he has to go through and all the attacks that he's under. So God bless him. I hope God prosper him. And I just hope after all this, God explodes his business like crazy. I hope he gets so much more wealth in his company. I just hope God will just bless him financially. I hope God will bless you, Dr. Frank, financially. I pray for you. I pray for your protection and your family. And I just want to thank you so much for being on my program. It's been a true honor to interview.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Amber.
And I hope we run into each other in the future.
You're in Arizona, right?
Yep.
I haven't been to Arizona yet. And I don't think it's a negative thing. I just think that you already had a good ground game and you didn't. It's like you didn't, you know, who's this guy, Dr. Frank? You didn't know who I was at that point either. And you had a good ground game going. And, you know, I would be delighted to come, of course, and help fan the flames. But there are plenty of flames there already. Mm-hmm. So most of my time is around the rest of the country. But I'm praying for Arizona, and I'm rooting for this. And one of our objectives is to make sure there's a fire in every state.
Yes, that's what we need.
And that's what, and so you've already got a fire there, but I'd be delighted to come there and meet you sometime.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd welcome you. I'd love to shake your hand, sir. Well, again, thank you for your time. I appreciate you very much. And I hope you have a wonderful day, Dr. Frank.
Thank you very much.